to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We love being with you and telling you about women who trusted God and how He used them in extraordinary ways. We had a couple of podcasts about a woman that Cheryl and I were really curious about. That's why we had to do several. And her name was Grace Livingston Hill.
Yeah.
What do you remember about her?
Well, you know what I loved is I came across Grace Livingston Hill when I was a young mom. And you know how you don't have that much time to read and it's got to be gripping? And that's when I started reading Grace Livingston Hill. And I felt like, you know, I probably wouldn't have read it in high school. It was a little sugary, a little too sweet.
Yes.
But for a young mom, it was just perfect. It wasn't too deep, and yet it had depth. I know that sounds weird because the story itself was just exactly how you wanted a story to go. You know, if I was going to say a way that Grace Livingston Hill wrote, it was like the story went exactly how you wanted it to go. But what she would weave in there was the depth. There would be theology. There would be quotes from books. And actually, there were more than one book that I bought because of a reference that she would give in the book. And I was remembering one book that she did, According to the Pattern. I was trying to, you know, remember the books that I read. What happened is, you know, I read a lot of them. I took a lot of them. Well, before we moved to England, I gave quite a bit of my library away because I thought, well, you know, these books have blessed me. I want them to bless others. Isn't that one of the hardest things to do?
Absolutely.
People do not know how much you give when you give a book that you've read and loved.
They're friends.
They really are. And so I gave those books away. And then there were others that I got while we lived in England, and I left those with, you know, friends. So as I said, she was, at that point, she was exactly what I needed in my life. Grace Livingston
Hill. Her style was sort of revolutionary when she started writing. And it was, now we look back and call her the pioneer of Christian fiction for women.
Right.
And, you know, the paperback novel for the Christian market. But at the time, she was doing something that was not really understood.
No. I think that, you know, you had someone like Jane Austen, who was, you know, in the Bronte sisters, who kind of broke the market for women writers. And then after that, you had your mystery writers like Dorothy Sayers and Agatha Christie. And there was one more that I can't remember right now. Hare is what I want to say, Georgette Hare. But anyway, these were kind of the ones that broke into the market of mystery. But as far as a Christian romance, and she took it, as I said, to a deeper level because of the theology in it. So we had your friend call in.
Yes, Melanie Dobson.
Right.
Who is also a novelist and writing, and she incorporated Grace Livingston Hill as a sort of a floating through the background of her historical novel. And today we are going to talk about another writer.
That's
why we had to start with Grace, because Grace had two daughters, and one of them was Ruth. And that's who we're going to talk about today, Ruth Muntz. She was born in January 1898.
Wow.
Yep. And she, of course, her mother was Grace Livingston Hill, and her father was the Presbyterian minister we talked about in the podcast about Grace. His name was Thomas Franklin Hill. And she was born in Germantown, Pennsylvania, but her father died when she was only 2 years old. She grew up in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, and had an older sister named Margaret.
Wow.
And Margaret was 5 years older than Ruth. And their grandmother, who was, I'm getting my generations mixed up here, but... So Grace Livingston Hill's mother was the grandmother of Ruth, and she came to live with them.
That's right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you remember that part.
Right.
And it put all that pressure on Grace to provide for this family. And the money all came from writing.
Right.
Not only from the novels she wrote, but other articles and things she was doing. So here's Ruth with that kind of background of writers. And Grace, her mother, had come from a family of writers as well. Ruth went to college. Can you guess which Christian college she went to back in the day? It was Wheaton.
I was going to say Wheaton, but then I was like, was Wheaton around?
I know, it was.
Oh, right, because she would have been at the turn of the century by now.
She was, but she had to leave college. She did not finish because World War I
broke
out.
Okay,
that's how far back we're going.
1914, yeah.
But she was also an accomplished concert violinist.
Whoa.
She studied at Juilliard.
No.
Yeah.
That is very, very impressive. Yeah. It's interesting, though, how many writers are also musicians, though. I mean,
ooh, interesting.
I'm not.
Thought.
I don't know.
I'm not at all.
But I do know quite a few. You know, we met this man, and he was also the church organist. You know, and it's interesting because music comes up a lot in Grace Livingston Hill books.
That's true.
It will be a hymn, or it will be about someone who's like an organist, or you know, they fall in love with the organist. And if I remember right, Grace Livingston Hill's first husband played the organ.
Or was it the second?
One.
Yeah,
one of them.
We'll have
That's
to,
what happens
we'll
when you have two.
We'll have to go back and listen to the podcast and remember.
Or they have to listen
but there was
to it,
the
yes.
music in it. So this is the thing, because that influence, as you said, Ruth and her sister Margaret founded the Swarthmore School of Music.
Wow.
Right where they lived in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And Ruth was an instructor in advanced violin, instrumental playing, musical history, and the orchestras.
That's amazing.
So there's that influence, just like you said.
Now, with her grandmother coming to live, though, I remember also reading in her biography, though, that it even though Grace Livingston Hill was responsible to provide, it also freed her up to be able to write.
Yes.
So the mother took care of everything. I mean, the mother would do the cooking,
the good thing,
the cleaning, and watch the girls. And then I think it's important to remember, too, that grandmothers were grandmothers younger. You know, you could be a grandmother
in your
40s.
That's
so you have a lot more energy than, say, us grandmas in our 60s. So she was just such a blessing as much as, you know, Grace is providing for them by these stories and, you know, writing. But she, what was it? She wrote 3 books a year?
She did. That's about what she needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been writing for over 40 years, and I write 2 or 3 books a year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's when you get in the rhythm that it just feels like, wait, I should have a
deadline
rhythm. On the calendar. You have to have a deadline.
What a rhythm.
That's it. So here we are with Ruth in 1925. She married Gordon Muntz. She was about 27 at the time.
Okay, and that's older for women in those days.
It was, but she was busy. She was starting music schools and teaching violin. And so he was an executive for Gulf Oil Company.
Wow.
They didn't have children of their own, but they adopted 2 sons, which are children of their own. But, I mean, they had these 2 adopted sons, Jim and Robert. And you had mentioned this with the Grace Livingston Hill podcast. I think it was you, not Melanie, but that you had read the biography of Grace Livingston Hill. And that was written by Robert.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
Yes, it was. But now, you know, interestingly, too, you know, I want to go back to a second to the fact that it must have been a disappointment not to be have children. And yet she adopted, which is just in those days, because my mom was adopted in, well, my mom was taken into a home in 1927. So probably just about the same time that these 2 young boys were adopted. You know, my mom was taken into this home and then wasn't legally adopted till she was 14, which is another story. But I was thinking about how I think sometimes you women are intimidated by writing or ministry because they haven't finished their education. And here she is, you know, having not finished her education. And there's a certain, you and I both know this, there's a certain almost, what do you want to say? Almost shame, like when you step away from college and you're so close to finishing.
When everybody asks you, so what was your major?
Well, which semester?
Yes.
Because we both kind of had that. And part of our, I think, our issue, though, was when we were in college, it was like Jesus is going to come at any moment.
So true.
Is this what I want to be doing with my life when he comes? And so
I want to be about the work
exactly,
of the ministry. And
exactly.
I don't really know what to focus on. And
exactly.
I just want to serve. I just want to go. Yeah. That was me. I was restless.
But when you were also in college, you didn't know you were going to be a writer.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. Now, when I was 12, I wanted to be a writer. And that's what I thought I wanted to do with my life. In fact, I signed up for, I was on the school newspaper, all those kind of things, because I would write articles. And I thought I wanted to do that until I found out a newspaper reporter only made like $20,000 a year. So I was like, oh, I need a better career. This is when I was 12. But I think it's so interesting that she didn't finish college, and yet look how accomplished she was.
Well, and this at that time in history, because she had to leave Wheaton because World War I broke out. And then they come into the crash of the stock market. And
that's right.
The depression. And then, so she's married now to Gordon Muntz in 1925. They were married for about 20 years before he died. And that was right soon after World War II ended.
Wow.
So, I mean, that time in history, the things that they had to put up with.
And also the instability. I mean, she went through the Depression and she's gone through two wars. And I mean, to go through the first war is hard enough. And, you know, she had to quit college and she wasn't married then.
Yeah.
And then, you know, no doubt her mom was supporting her. And then after that, she and her sister start the school. She gets married. She adopts two sons. And then her husband dies during World War II when everything is destabilized again.
Yeah. It was soon after World War II ended. I think World War II ended in 45. So this was two years later, 47. So this is what was really the shocker for her, though, is that her mother died the same year.
No.
Yeah.
So Grace Livingston Hill.
She did.
Oh,
and so
that's
here's
so
loss.
Destabilizing.
And
yes.
Grace, as we learned in Grace's podcast, that she was had a work in progress, like passed away with a pen in her hand, basically. Mm-hmm. And so the publisher, Lippincott, came to Ruth and said, can you finish your mother's novel?
Wow.
And she went after it and tried, and she did, and turned it in. And they said, we cannot tell the difference. You sound just like your mom. So, I mean, this was like a whole lifetime of being around writers and being influenced and being so familiar. I mean, I just think that's the sweetest thing that she would even
She must have read her mother's books, too.
Yeah.
You know, I know, I don't know if you've had this experience with an editor, but they don't know your voice. And so they're not carrying forward what, you know, and I've had editors that have like kind of like overwhelmed me, and I was a little intimidated. Mm-hmm. And so it's their voice in the book. And it was like, I would never phrase it like that. I would never say it like that. I was pretty naive at that time.
I've had both where they change it so much that it doesn't sound like what I was even trying to say. But then I've also worked for many years with a fantastic editor.
Me too.
Who it's seamless.
Yeah.
I don't remember her changes began and my words ended.
You know, one of my editors, though, she first went back and she listened to quite a few of my Bible studies.
Mm.
Not only did she read my transcript, but then she went, she read, she listened to some of my Bible studies and she picked up my voice so perfectly.
That's a gift.
It really was. And so that, again, it's seamless. There are two of my books that I feel like it's so seamless, and two that I'm like, you know, at least the message is there, and she got the message. She might not have gotten my voice, and it might not always be me telling the story or giving the principle, but she got the message. But on the other ones, they got the voice. So, you know, Ruth knows her mother's voice, and she knows, no doubt, the type of story that her mom would write.
Yep.
And so she picks up the pen.
And can finish it.
Yeah.
In a way that's very satisfying to the readers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
publisher
was...
Do you know which book it was?
It was called Mary Arden,
I've read that one.
Have you really?
Oh, yes. I remember it from the Arden, like, because we have a friend whose little boy's named Arden, and it was like, amazing. Oh, wait, I've heard that before.
Yep.
Wow.
So that was the hybrid.
Yes.
And she pulled it off. And then that prompted the publisher to say, well, do you want to keep writing? How about if you write some more books for us? So she dove in, and she, okay, let's see the dates. She finished her mom's novel in 1948. She wrote her own next novel, 1949, then another one in 1950, 1951, 1955, 1959, and 1962.
Wow.
How many was that? Six or seven altogether? And in the writing, she was able to use the name Ruth Livingston Hill, even though her name Ruth Muntz, but what a value that was to have that pen name to carry on, the Livingston Hill, so that readers would say, oh, this is her daughter. This is my favorite author's daughter. I have to read her book. So very interesting. Same genre, these sweet love stories that really lifted up God's involvement in a person's romance, a person's life, and providing for them, taking care of them. And that's why, especially for her mom's, that being the theme in her mom's book, during those difficult years, World War I, the Depression, the World War II, like, the readers needed that hope. And Ruth carried that on so that she was able to provide from a biblical point of view and the characters wanting to honor God with their lives to tell these stories of everyday life situations and to really elevate the Lord in the story.
And I'm thinking about what an honor to, when you've lost someone that you love, to be able to co-write or to kind of continue on that legacy.
No.
And, you know, I have some of that because I took over my mom while she was still living. She succumbed to dementia. And so I took over The Joyful Life, and she would have me teach more and more. But there's a sense that she's still with me. I don't know how to explain it, except for a friend of mine was saying the other day that we are all of one body, whether in heaven or earth. And so that when we are in Christ, we are still with those that we've lost. They're still with us. And there is that sense, and I believe Ruth must have had it.
Yeah, you can still hear her voice.
Right.
In your thoughts, or she would have said it this way. Or
exactly.
This feels familiar.
And to do it with absolute joy, that you're carrying on something that you learned and you loved from your parents.
Yep.
And again, I think of, okay, this is the, you've got a grandma who's a godly woman. You've got Grace, who's a godly woman, even through all of the turmoil and hardships that we learned about in the podcast. And then she passes it down to her daughter, Ruth, who has also been through her own hardships. And Ruth gets it. And Ruth has adopted these two boys. And as you said, it's Robert who goes on to write the story of his grandmother.
Yes.
I mean, that's...
I know, it's in the genes of that family. I'm
except for
you.
Robert's not even related. So it's like she...
yes, was in the home. And it just was...
It's the fruit. It
yes,
really is
yes.
the fruit of these godly lives. I mean, setting these examples, loving these young men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's amazing.
It is amazing. And here's what's so interesting to me is that following the death of Ruth's mother and her husband, she and her two sons moved to Tampa Bay, Florida after all these years in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Moving to Tampa Bay, Florida. And she got a job teaching Bible history for 3 months at St. Petersburg High School.
Wow.
Until the school board decided to do away with the subject because it would open the way for more, quote, subversive groups.
Oh, like, yeah.
She was the gateway to
the
Communist
Party. Yeah, you know
the
subversive groups that
she was
study the Bible.
Teaching Bible history, which just is so interesting because she only lasted 3 months. But then here's what she decided to do. She chose to finish her college education. And she earned a teacher's certificate. The reason, she said, was because she was determined to fill a void for Christian education. She had these two boys. She, you know, they would be teenagers at this time. Mm. But she started a Christian school in the fall of 1952. That was early on Christian
school. But this is also about the time that Madeline...
Langle?
No, Madeline O'Hare, the atheist. That she's,
in the 50s? Well, that early? I think she was more in the 60s.
I think she was in the 60s too, but I mean, she was already causing commotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. There was already, well, she was actually chosen. There was already an opposition to prayer in school starting in the late, early 50s.
So here she is in the 1952 with this Christian school, and it had 40 elementary students who attended, and she was able to just keep that school going with her own financial backing. And then in the school was named Grace Livingston Hill Memorial School in honor of her mother.
Wow.
She remained the principal at the school for 10 years, where she also taught Bible and English classes. And then this just amazes me. In 1961, she turned the school over to a man named Bill Caldwell, and he had been operating the Keswick radio stations and the Southern Keswick Bible Conference on the same site as the school. And the school was then renamed the Keswick Christian School in 1962. It's still thriving today.
Wow.
But here's what Ruth did in 1968. She's 70 years old. We have to pay attention to
this,
Cheryl.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Yes, and I'm all ears.
She left Florida. Most people at 70 go to Florida.
Yeah.
She left Florida and went to Nairobi.
No.
I'm choked up.
At
she went
70.
To Africa. She went to Nairobi, Africa at 70 years old.
Wow.
Where she stayed for 8 years.
No.
Teaching Bible.
Till she was 78?
Yes. And then when she returned, she continued to teach in Florida 14 interdenominational Bible studies each week, which she continued into her 90s.
What?
She became a well-known Bible teacher in the St. Petersburg area and was sought after because everyone said it was her breadth of knowledge. So she had to write another book. What was that book? Well, she took it from all the Bible studies that she had been doing in the training in Africa, and she wrote that book in 1996, I believe.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And then wrote another one on the Gospel of John. Okay, Ruth died 2001.
No.
And she was 103 years old.
Wow.
I mean, this is so encouraging for any woman listening who feels like, I had all these hardships in my life. There were so many things to overcome. I had to help everybody else out. And I never really got to do what I wanted to do or what I felt God was calling me to do. I'm 70 years old. I must be done. Oh, no.
No.
Africa, baby. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because in a couple of weeks, I want to do one on a lady named Phyllis Thompson, who... you know, she went to the mission field, and right when she went to the mission field, it closed down. But after that, she began to write biographies later in life of women.
Mm.
And so it's not too late to pursue the call of God. I mean, Moses was 80, right?
Yep.
So
all that preparation, all those years is just to...
So she taught 14 different Bible studies?
Yes. How did she do that?
I don't know.
Well into her 90s.
And wrote a book. So the book she wrote in 1996 was...
That one was titled, it was called What Happened? A Study in Genesis. And it was used as a textbook for Christian schools or home Bible studies. And then the other one that was published...
Yeah, and Genesis would have been what was under attack in that time, too, because of Darwinism gaining ground in the Scopes trial.
Yes, and she experienced all that starting a Christian school. The other book is called Living Water, The Gospel of John with Notes. That was also published in 1996.
That's amazing.
So to all you wannabe writers out there, start writing.
That's right.
Get going. Yep. I love that she died at 103, was well-loved, well-honored, well-known in her community for being a Bible teacher and a woman who just honored God with her life fully.
Isn't that crazy? Because we know about Grace Livingston Hill, but here is this gem that is lesser known. And yet, it almost would seem like her works in some ways exceeded those of her mom. Robin, thank you so much for introducing us to Grace Livingston Hill's daughter.
Ruth Muntz, we will remember you.
Yes, I love it.
Listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at www.uk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.